The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Brian Miller. Brian is a managing director in the Disputes and Investigations Practice at Navigant here in Washington, D.C. At Navigant, Brian brings over 27 years of experience as a federal prosecutor, inspector general, civil litigator to support his clients across a broad spectrum of white-collar disputes, investigations, compliance issues, monitoring, and ultimately, potentially, litigation. Right, Brian?
That's right.
All right. So, Brian, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on again.
Great to be here, Roger. Thank you so much for having me on. It's great to see you again, Roger.
I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to this conversation today. Can we talk about like what turns out to be one of your common favorite subjects, the GSA's transactional data reporting rule? And, you know, many of our listeners know that you served as the IG for the Inspector General for the General Services Administration for almost a decade. Mm-hmm. And one of your responsibilities there, your program responsibilities, you provided audit support to the contracting officers, as well as doing investigations and contract issue, pricing issues and that sort of thing. So I think you're perfect guy to talk about this transactional data reporting rule. The comments were actually submitted yesterday, and for sake of full disclosure, the Coalition for Government Procurement did submit comments, raising some concerns, let's say, with the rule. But today I think we'll just talk about, you know, what's going on with the rule for our listening audience and just some observations about it. So from a big picture perspective, I'm going to let you start. Like, what does the rule sort of entail?
Well, Roger, the rule entails having contractors report data to the federal government. And there's kind of shifting the burden of collecting the data to contractors. So contractors will now, under this proposed rule, have to report sales and information, products, sales to all governmental entities, all the federal agencies, but also some non-governmental, non-federal entities as well, like the Red Cross, state and local governments, Indian tribes. They have this other category,
right,
which may be a little tricky for some of the contractors to figure out whether or not sales to an entity like the Red Cross really are covered sales that they have to collect and report.
Right.
And
so all that pricing info, the prices paid and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, prices paid, what the part is, if it's a product, what the product is, if it's a service, what the service is. I think you've, in one of your articles, you went down a list of what will have to be reported, you know, quantity of the item sold, universal part code, price paid per unit. And then they're going to collect all this data. And then, Roger, you know what they're going to do with it.
No, you tell me, Brian. Okay. That's the $1 million.
That is the $1 million question.
Or maybe it's a 6-hour question. I don't know. We'll get to that later, too. Yes. You know, but from your perspective, and looking at it, the rule, what is GSA's goals in trying to collect this information? Because you get right to the bottom line, like, what are they going to do with it? So what did they say their goals are?
Well, their goals are to become more transparent and to establish horizontal pricing. They want to prevent the situation where a federal agency might buy, let's say, a laptop for $500, and they discover that another federal agency bought the same laptop for $100. Right. And so you have a discrepancy in the prices paid. And so they want to make sure that all the federal agencies know that there are lower prices out there. And so if they have all this information, they can compare across the board and everybody can buy the laptop for $100. So that's probably an oversimplification, but I think that is the basic idea behind this.
Right. I think that's pretty accurate, the theory behind it. Whether it's the reality of the marketplace and the way it works is a whole other question. So addressing price variability, that you just described, is one of their chief concerns. One of the areas I guess the rule provides as well is from GSA's perspective, a trade-off, right? If you, this pilot program, if you report transactional data, the price reduction clause would potentially be waived, application of it. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, obviously, Roger, you know I do.
Wouldn't be asking you, right, Brian?
I call it the Faustian bargain or the Faustian pact, where the price reduction clause, more precisely, the tracking mechanism in the price reduction clause, does not seem to have a whole lot to do with this particular pilot project. You can collect all this data. In fact, the government already has this data, but you can collect all this data from contractors and do your horizontal pricing. And an integral part of that, GSA says, they're going to have category experts so that people'll have experts there to help determine the pricing and the lowest pricing and compare it to other factors, which are pretty vague, but we'll get to those later. And perhaps get a portion of commercial competition into it, but all that remains to be seen and is very vague and opaque. But the bargain, what's in it for contractors to spend a lot more money putting up systems to collect this data and produce this data? Well, the one thing that almost everybody can agree on, except for my old office they don't like the price reduction clause and they don't like the tracking mechanism. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind that tracking mechanism is to incorporate some of the competition from the commercial marketplace into the federal arena. I mean, how else are you going to know if the price of a computer goes down from $500 to $100 or $50, you have to have some mechanism to import that competition to help prices go down for the federal government. And so it's hard for contractors to comply with that. It's sometimes difficult to understand, and they would rather get rid of it. And so GSA is holding out this carrot, this Faustian deal where if you just, we'll relieve you of this burden if you just do this transactional data for us.
Right. So why do you call it a Faustian, I think I'm pronouncing that right, a Faustian deal or...
A deal with the devil.
Yeah, deal. the devil that you know or versus the
devil
one you,
that
don't,
you
know.
Don't know. Right. That's all from my article in Law 360.
Right. I was going to mention that article. It's a great article. Very interesting. And actually, I have to confess for the listeners, it made me laugh out loud. A couple of lines in there is very good. So talk about why this is.
You've
the devil's in the details, so to speak.
You've heard of buyer beware, caveat emptor.
Yes. Call it. Oh, yeah.
A caveat contractor, but the basic problem is that they're trading two things that aren't really all that related. So you get rid of the price reduction clause, and then you find out that you have an additional burden of collecting this information. You have parts of it that are just unclear. And yep. So you don't really know what you're getting into. So it's the devil you don't know. And then at the very end, they say, by the way, we may require the price reduction clause, the commercial sales practices of data anyway. So you have to keep the CSPs, the commercial sales practices format, and you have to collect the data, and you have to do all that anyway. So
right, so they're not really eliminating anything. They've got now they've got transactional data reporting and the CSP.
You have both. You end up with both. That's why I call it a Faustian or a bargain with the devil, because you never really win, and right. you end up having both burdens. And so,
Brian, we're already up on a break. That's fast. That was fast. So, but you know what the good thing is? We can come back and talk about the rules some more, your article, and I really want to get into you. Make some great observations about data reporting on the transactional side and the Civil False Claims Act and, you know, the applicability to the data that's being reported on prices paid. My guest today is Brian Miller. He is a managing director in the disputes and investigations practice at Navigant. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Agencies today understand they are under a constant cyber threat. They also understand that in order to build continuous diagnostics and mitigation solutions that meet their mission requirements, they need a partner, not just a vendor. At Booz Allen Hamilton, we approach CDM by rolling up our sleeves and partnering with our clients to develop long-term solutions based on our cybersecurity experience and tradecraft. Our cyber experts and technologists work with agencies to tailor blueprints that meet their needs so that they can turn insight into action and stay in command and control of their IT enterprise. We build solutions that dynamically defend our clients' most critical assets, keeping them ahead of threats. Today, data and technology are critical to meet the business needs at any agency. And at Booz Allen Hamilton, we're here to help our clients be truly cyber ready. Learn more about our CDM services and solutions at boozallen.com/CDM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Brian Miller. He is a managing director in the disputes and investigations practice at Navigant. Brian served as the inspector general for GSA for about 10 years. Our paths crossed in a positive way at GSA, Brian.
Always.
So I couldn't think of a better person to come in and talk about, transactional data reporting and the proposed rule. And, you know, Brian did write a recent article for Law 360, caveat contractor, GSA's proposed transactional data reporting rule. So, Brian, when we took the break, I mentioned that you had some interesting Civil False Claims Act analysis in your article, and I wanted to give you a chance to walk through that because it has a great punchline at the end that I just love. That's the one I told you I laughed out loud. It was great. Go ahead.
Well, Roger, you know, coming from a law enforcement background and as a former IG, you know, I understand how inspectors general think, how Department of Justice thinks, and I'm very familiar with the False Claims Act. I've done hundreds of False Claims Act cases as a AUSA, Assistant U.S. Attorney.
Right.
And so I was looking at this and looking at not only the burdens of that contractors will have on reporting this data, but what happens when they miss some data.
Oops.
Oops. It's all of a sudden it's inaccurate data. It's incomplete data. And, you know, maybe it's not current data. And so, you know, they have inaccurate data, and that goes into the pricing analysis that GSA does. And under the False Claims Act, where if you're successful under the False Claims Act, you get treble damages and civil penalties. And these add up to judgments in the millions of dollars. And, you know, there was a recent case where a contractor eventually won in the Court of Appeals, and it was a great victory, but they still are, and the damages will be reduced, but they still have significant civil penalties in the millions of dollars.
Right.
Because every time you submit a false claim, there's a penalty.
Right. And that false claim is the invoice. When you submit an invoice to the government for payment and you haven't accurately reported your transactional data, that's not a good combination, right?
You quickly get into millions of dollars. And so it's a very scary sort of situation, especially in an unknown new area. And so, you know, you have to put it together. The mental requirement under the False Claims Act is you simply have to do it with reckless disregard.
Right.
Or deliberate ignorance. And reckless disregard is a pretty low standard. The courts have compared that to not paying attention. They've used the ostrich metaphor,
right.
Having your head in the sand.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you have to really work at this. So reckless disregard would be, you know, not putting in a system that would collect data across a couple of IT systems. Reckless disregard might be, you know, not following what's being produced or checking it. And it's going to require time. You know, I put in the article that, you know, spending only 6 hours to set up this system might be considered reckless disregard.
In and of itself, yeah.
In and of itself.
Right, right. So, and that's, and I have to confess to you, Brian, that's where, like, I was reading your article. When I saw that line, I laughed out loud. It was so apropos. It was perfect in terms of describing, you know, the assessment of the burden. And just to give you some feedback on that, we surveyed the Coalition for Government Procurement, and it's in our in the comments that the coalition submitted. You know, we surveyed our members about the potential burden, and we're talking for large businesses, you know, over 1,000 hours on average just to implement and adjust their systems. Because it's not like this data sits in one. There's this urban myth that the data is all in one spot and you can just press a button, like, you know, the Staples, that was easy button, press that. That's not an advertisement. It just came into my head. But and all of a sudden you can produce that data. But really, is, you know, these systems are many different modules. They're pulling it from all different pieces and different, and especially for a big, you know, nationwide commercial company that's doing business with the federal government. It's not that easy. And a small businesses too, on average, indicated it would take over 200 hours to implement alone. And no one said it would take 31 minutes. A GSA indicated it would take 31 minutes a month to actually administer it. No one said that.
It might actually be harder for smaller companies because they may not have the mechanisms in place.
Right.
And there's so many data points that they're pulling out. They have to pull out IFF. They have to pull out other data depending on what other businesses they're involved with or other regulatory requirements.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's going to be a huge burden.
Right. And so, that's a great point because, you know what, interestingly enough, and lots of these BPAs off schedule or even in orders, the agencies themselves ask for additional data.
Yeah.
So we talk to companies all the time who have to make investments. They win something, and the part of the victory is additional cost because they have to report some unique element of data that agency wants in relation to the work that are being done. And that's not also being taken into consideration in this rule.
And again, it's in addition to keeping the CSPs.
Yes, absolutely. That's a great point.
And the CEO can ask for the CSPs at any time. The rule makes that plain. And so, you know, you may have to respond to a CEO asking for CSPs at the same time you're trying to produce accurate transactional data. And, you know, it can be daunting.
In your view, I would recommend, do you think that's, I mean, many have commented that, you know, the eliminating the price reduction clause, but maintaining the CSP and sort of the ongoing monitoring of that might actually be more work than tracking under the PRC. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh yeah. Right now, my former office does audits. We call them pre-award audits and post-award audits. So there are two major points in a contract when a contractor really has to have all the CSPs in order and expect an audit. It would be at the formation. Of a contract. That's pre-award audit. At the termination of a contract, you may have a post-award audit, but you don't have audits in the middle of the contract. Now, under this rule, you could, because a CO can ask for the CSPs, the IG, the Office of Inspector General, can use that data to do an audit, and you might have an audit in the middle of a contract. So you might have more. It may lead to actual more enforcement than before,
right?
Because it's opened up the door there. It's opened up the door to potential False Claims Act cases that I was mentioning before.
And right, you failed to report the data the transactional data accurately.
Right, that becomes
or civil False Claims Act on the CSP too. Right, that's ongoing. Right.
Yeah. And there have been many. Mm-hmm. Certainly this transactional data, whatever that calculus is that GSA is going to do with these category managers. If you put false data in there, it's going to influence the government's understanding of pricing, or at least that would be the theory under the False Claims Act.
Mm-hmm.
And so so I think that is a vulnerability that I don't think anybody had been talking about.
Yeah.
And it didn't come up in the rule or
no.
at the town hall?
No, it did not come up at the public meeting. What did come up, and I want to get your thoughts on, is the proprietary nature of the information. There are several questions asked of GSA yeah. because unit pricing is commercial proprietary competitive information, and under FOIA can be protectable, you know, under the law. And so there are questions about, you know, access to it and protection of that. And would that be something that's a fair concern?
I think it is a fair concern, especially because if you're having a horizontal comparison of your pricing, you're going to want to explain your pricing. You want to put the context in. So you may want to put in something about a promotion, bundling, you know, all sorts of other information that it goes beyond simply product and price and the unit sold.
Right, because they do ask for a description of the work, right?
Yeah.
So that's where you probably put that in.
Yep. Yes, and you want to win more contracts and task orders, and so mm-hmm. you want to put that in. Now, what happens to that information? Well, it's kept secure by GSA. The security rests solely in the hands of GSA. And, you know, you could rely on this exemption from FOIA when it's proprietary information, but when it's information about units sold and when it's being used across the board by other federal agencies, and it's not clear exactly how confidential this information will be, obviously, other federal employees will get to see it. It makes it hard, in my mind, to withhold it under FOIA. And if you step back and take a big picture look at
sure.
this, you know, from the perspective of taxpayers wanting to know what money is spent on, what products and services mm-hmm. their mm-hmm. government is buying mm-hmm. and at what price, I think it's going to be hard to say, no, we're not going to tell you the prices of computers bought by you know, a federal agency, or we're not going to share this information when the whole point of the information is to show what prices are being, what products are being bought at what prices by federal agencies.
Right.
I would imagine there'd be a lot of congressional interest in that and ultimately taxpayer interest.
Yeah.
And so from the big picture point of view, I think it would be difficult to withhold it under FOIA. You'd have to have strong safeguards to mm-hmm. protect the proprietary information and to make sure it is proprietary.
Yep, you're right. Brian, we do have to take a break. We're already up on our next break. My guest today is Brian Miller. He is a managing director in the disputes and investigations practice at Navigant. And when we come back, I want one final question on the horizontal pricing, this transactional data and horizontal pricing, and you know Brian's thoughts on the effectiveness of that, and then effectiveness of that approach, and then we'll turn maybe to the mandatory disclosure rule and some internal investigation advice. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
These days, it seems everyone's talking about the new normal, but federal agencies have a chance to define it. How will you shape your future? Turn to Deloitte. We understand what makes America work and how it can work better. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we can help you rethink, reduce, and restructure, or even change the game. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Brian Miller. He is Managing Director in the Disputes and Investigations Practice at Navigant, supporting government contractors and companies across the spectrum of white-collar issues. Right, Brian? So I want to finish up on the I have about three questions, I guess, on the the transactional, well, it will be mandatory, the transactional data reporting rule. And I guess first, you know, going back to the burden, I think that's one area where, as companies figure out and assess the costs associated with it, how is that going to work, and what can companies look to do to try to address that?
Well, thank you, Roger. That's something that I believe that Navigant can really help companies with. Navigant has a terrific IT Department of Forensic IT experts, and they put together systems like this all the time. They can put together a system that will gather data from different IT systems in different locations. They can store the data. They can analyze the data. They can help you ensure that you're going to produce accurate information on a timely basis. And so that's one thing that Navigant can really do.
That's important, right? That Civil False Claims Act stuff, right?
Indeed. Well, the consequences are huge. Oh, yeah. And I did want to add that on the confidential, I didn't want to overblow the point about information might become public, because it all turns
on. You're talking about the confidentiality and the Freedom of Information Act of the of that data that Navigant's going to help folks produce, indeed, or accurately indeed produce, right?
Yes, and produce, make sure it is protected.
Right.
But it all turns on how GSA is going, how careful GSA is going to be in handling the data and what they're going to do with it. The more they share it with others, the more they share it with possibly other federal agencies, but others beyond that, maybe competitors, who knows. It's a bit unclear as to exactly what these category managers are going to do as they do their calculus to determine lowest pricing. But my point is simply that it's a danger.
Yeah. And another thing I wanted to get your thoughts on with regard to the rule is, what are the challenges? I mean, from your perspective, we've talked a lot about some of the challenges and issues, and I just, at bottom, the idea is to do some better comparison of pricing. Do you see opportunities there? Do you see other challenges there? What's the sort of big picture there, do you think?
I think in terms of the big picture, I applaud the move towards transparency and lower prices. I'm not sure that this rule is going to get us there.
Why is that?
Well, because I think to get lower prices, you really do need to incorporate some of the competition in the commercial marketplace. And they do have some references to commercial marketplace and price lists and that sort of thing. So they do have some ways of doing that. But I guess it remains to be seen as to how they're actually going to do this. The other part of it that I keep thinking about is we have this, the government has this data. And I would like to see a lot of work go into making the database better, have agencies report the data into the database, make it accurate. Nobody uses the database because everybody knows it's inaccurate.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I could see the federal government keeping their own database up to date and putting the effort into improving that.
Yeah, and one final, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but we sort of are, I guess, or a transactional data reporting issue. But, one of the things that I think was noted by industry in particular, too, is that despite the burden that, industry has identified, the rule is at no cost to the government. Do you see that as being problematic?
Well, I mean, that goes to my earlier point about FPDSNG. I mean, the government should be able to improve the system. And, is it really fair to have the data reported by the contractors again? I'm not sure that it is. And I guess one, if I could be facetious again for a minute.
Sure.
Do I like the rule? Do enforcement types like the rule? Well, it might lead to more enforcement. It may lead to more oversight, more
and
audits.
And more opportunities for you, right?
And more opportunities for me to help right. contractors.
Right.
Defend and navigate their way through these.
Yes, that's what I meant to say. Yes.
At Navigant.
Right. Hey, so let's turn to, I wanted to get some thoughts in some other areas while I had time. And one of the areas where you were a leader in implementing the mandatory disclosure rule and across government at GSA, the reporting into the GSAIG. And I know you've you take a lot of pride in that effort, and I just want to get your sense right now, so that you implemented it, you put it in place when you're in government. Now you're on the outside, sort of helping folks navigate through that process. How do you see it? How is it going? as a policy, and you know the goals that are ascribed to it.
Well, you know, as I've said before, as a policy in terms of the federal government is recovering money that it would never have realized it lost apart from the program. And, you know, as I mentioned before, it does give an opportunity for the Office of Inspector General to actually talk with contractors or their attorneys, precisely.
Sure.
and to get a better feel for what contractors are going through. You know, we, Roger and I were joking about the, disconnect between GSA and contractors, estimating that it would only take 6 hours to put the rule up and 30 minutes a month.
Right.
You know, I maybe the Office of Inspector General, you know, through the mandatory disclosure rule, has a better sense of just how difficult it is to report accurate data. And the various IT systems they have to go through, the various locations, and you know, some of the frustrations. A lot of companies that have acquired other companies, and the other companies have problems, and you know, it just it's contractors are facing a lot of complex and difficult problems. And
So one of the things I wanted to ask you just real quickly is, I think this is an extremely complex issue. And that's the privilege question in the context of the mandatory disclosures and internal investigations. And I know it's something that you've thought about a lot and are watching in that Barco case, I guess, is the big case on with regard to privilege. And, you know, what are your thoughts on that area about privilege and the interplay between that attorney-client or privilege when you're doing an internal investigation, and you know, the issues, has it gotten waived? You know, judges have interpreted it as being waived in certain situations. Right. Where does that actually discourage somebody looking at something as opposed to not? And what are the issues around that?
I think the original Barco decision did discourage people from looking at it, and that's why I was alarmed when I read Barco, and I wrote an article with Andy Liu at Kroll & Mooring, and so we wrote it on Barco, and then it got appealed to the D.C. Circuit. And in the KBR decision, the three-judge panel actually rendered a very nice opinion. And they clarified that, no, the privilege does extend to internal investigations, even when you're doing it to comply with the mandatory disclosure rule. And so that was a very helpful opinion. But I do think that privilege is a big issue in a voluntary disclosures and mandatory disclosures. And a contractor has to be very careful in how they do the investigation, you know, make it clear that, you know, it's done for advice of counsel, or it's done at the direction of counsel, so that it's done in anticipation of litigation. So the privilege applies so that it attaches from the very start. You have to be careful in how you present the information. Facts, just plain old facts, are not privileged.
Right.
Yep. But opinions are. So when you are disclosing facts and you disclose a little bit more, you might run into the opposite problem of waiver. So in Barco, the problem was the judge said, oh, privilege never attached because you were doing it for the mandatory disclosure rule. Well, it attaches, but it can be waived. Mm-hmm. And so it's a tricky area, and one that, you know, contractors should give a lot of thought to, and obviously get legal advice and advice of consultants like me at Navigant. But I think it is a good program, and more contractors have been making disclosures
and working it out with the government.
I think,
from your perspective,
I think so. I think that they've been treated fairly, at least from my former office. But you know, others may disagree. You know, I was having meeting with two other attorneys.
Brian, we do have to.
Oh, okay.
We do have to take a break when we come back. You can tell your story when you get back. Meeting with a couple lawyers. My guest today is Brian Miller. He is the managing director in the disputes and investigations practice at Navigant. And you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Brian Miller. Ryan is managing director and disputes and investigations practice at Navigant. And, you know, Brian, this is a little different area we haven't touched on in your prior appearance on the show and this time, and that's suspension and debarment. And, you know, that's an area I know you had a lot of experience when you were at GSA. And you also assist clients now, particularly serve as a monitor in many instances. And so my first question for listening on, so what is a monitor and what do they do?
Good question, Roger. And what monitors do can vary depending on the context. In the debarment area, a company may be proposed for debarment. The debarring official may want some assurance that the company really has cleaned up its act. And the standard is that the company is presently responsible. And to prove that, the company will often say, well, look, we've made changes. In the past, we made mistakes, but we've changed the system. We've gotten rid of the bad apples, and we're different now. And to prove it, we're going to hire someone to come in and check us periodically and write a report that goes to, you know, our management and to the debarring official. And the debarring official likes that arrangement because it shows the company is anxious to prove that it is presently responsible. And there's some verification that they didn't just change the deck chairs on the Titanic. And so that monitor in the debarment context does that. There are also monitors in a criminal context. If a company has a deferred prosecution agreement, they'll have a monitor. In the healthcare area, they have monitors as well. And it varies from subject matter to subject matter. That's essentially what a monitor does. It verifies.
Right. And it's like when you described it, it's like you are helping the debarring official and you're helping the company as well. That's kind of an interesting nexus there, right?
At the same time.
Yeah.
Yes. I like that nexus very much because, you know, you're helping a company to do what it wants to do. And, you know, oftentimes senior managers, whether they're in the government or in a company, they don't really know what's going on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, they can't get that involved in micromanaging.
Right. They're looking at the big picture, strategic, whatever.
They're looking at the big picture. And so so they need to find out what's going on. And a monitor will help them get facts, the facts they need. You know, there are other things you could do if you're facing debarment. You could take steps to get ready. If you know you're referred for suspension and debarment and you know that eventually you'll be meeting with the debarring official, well, you may want to start to reorganize, to change the program that got you into difficulty. Take a look at the management of the program. If there was someone that was failing, you may want to make a change. Debarring officials do look at that very closely. And one idea that I've seen companies do rather effectively is to hire someone as maybe not a monitor. You can call them a monitor if you want, but as an ethics expert or a compliance expert. And that person would come in and function almost the same way as a monitor. But you do that ahead of the meeting with the debarring official. And right. That also shows how anxious and eager you are to comply with the rules, to show that you are presently responsible and that you should continue receiving federal contracts.
Right. So you go in with, you have a plan, you go in and you put together, here's a correct, sort of like corrective actions you've taken to address the, let's call it an anomaly that resulted in someone saying, hey, this company should be proposed for a debarment or be suspended. So when the debarring officials like look at that kind of thing, is there any interaction? Let's say, you know, it was referred to, I assume like the IG may have referred somebody, hey, you need to look at this. Do they go back and talk to the IG's office? Is that various agents and say, hey, here's what they've done. What do you think? Does that happen? Right.
Well, you know, the debarring official has to be sure that he or she is getting all the information. They often do talk to the IGs, the referring, and most of these are referred by the inspector general.
Right. Okay. And do you see, you know, when you're looking out there in this monitoring role or just supporting clients who are trying to navigate that process and get back on the right side of, I guess, you know, and put the corrective actions, are you seeing any key trends in this area that people should be aware of?
Well, I do think that debarring officials are becoming more and more active. I think there's more interest in Congress on what they're doing, and I think as a result, they're actually doing more what we call fact-based debarments, where they're not waiting for a criminal conviction before they start the process. They're getting involved earlier on in the process. And so you may be hearing from a debarring official much earlier than in the past. And I think they're doing more cases.
Right. So in that area, too, when you talk about fact-based or being more involved, is there more of a trend to have more, I wouldn't call it informal conversations, but, you know, hey, heads up, we're about to do this, or come in and talk to us, you know, as in anticipation of potential, so that you're making people aware up front a little bit. I mean, I know back several years ago was an effort to try to create a process where more you talk first before it happened.
Right.
Is any of that kind of stuff going on or not?
It is. And more of that is going on. I think it's a good thing. Sometimes if the debarring official doesn't get involved, and then all of a sudden you may be suspended, and you don't want to be in the context of being suspended. You want to be in the context of continuing the contract and continuing to do a federal business while you're talking to the debarring official and explaining that, look, this is an anomaly. You know, this is a problem that happened before. It's not going to happen again. We fixed the problem. And, you know, here's the evidence right. about how we fixed it.
Right. And here we have this new monitor who's going to come in and help you and do report if updates you
have,
for you.
If right? you have any doubts whether it's really fixed, right. well, the monitor is going to persuade you that it is.
Yeah, right. So, hey, Brian, thanks for being on the show today. We're wrapping it up right now.
But great to be here.
Right. My guest today was Brian Miller. He is Managing Director in the Disputes and Investigations Practice at Navigant. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.